there is the computation of the same observables at the limit where the tooth coupling, lambda, goes to infinity. So let me start. As we learned in a Freddy talk, in the planar limit that we are interested in, what we want to compute is, let's say, an n gluon scattering amplitude in n equal to 4, where the momenta, let's say k1, k2, k3, and so on, up to kn, are color ordered. This was called the coefficient of a single trace, the partial amplitude. Now, for n equal to 4 in the planar limit, the computation of this scattering amplitude at any value of the coupling is equal to the computation of an expectation value of a Wilson loop. This Wilson loop has a polygon shape. So say this is the Wilson loop, and the relation between the shape of the loop and the scattering amplitude we are interested in is that the edges of the loop are made from the gluon momenta. Let's say this is K1, this is K2, K3, and so on. And the reason this loop is closed is because we have momentum conservation, because the sum of the whole momenta sum to zero. And the claim that I would not derive here is that the planar limit computing this partial amplitude is the same as computing the expectation value of such a Wilson loop. Okay? So in this talk, I would only focus on this side of the duality. So by saying scattering amplitude, what we will be actually computing is the expectation value of such Wilson loops. At strong coupling, the computation of such a Wilson loop or a scattering amplitude is given by the following. Expectation value of such a Wilson loop is proportional to an exponent of minus square root of lambda. Remember that we are in the limit where lambda goes to infinity, times a minimal area of a minimal surface in anti-de Sitter space. And which surface is that? So let me draw it here. Let's this be our polygon we are interested in. It leaves its strong coupling on the boundary of ADS. Let this be R1, 3, and this direction here be the radial direction of ADS. And this area that we are interested in computing is the minimal area of a worksheet that is stretched from this Wilson loop on the boundary into the bulk of ADS. And the reason it extends into the bulk, into the radial direction of ADS, is the curve metric, that the metric of ADS in Poincaré coordinate is this dx 1, 3 squared plus the r squared over r squared. So you see that to minimize the area, you want to go away from the boundary where r equal to 0 to large r. What we will do today is exactly computing the area of such minimal surface and therefore computing the expectation value of these Wilson loops or the value of the scattering amplitudes at strong coupling. Before going into the computation, let me mention one point. At strong coupling, such area of worksheet that ends on a polygon is actually divergent. And the reason is that if we have a cusp, then the area here of a worksheet that extends from this cusp, near the cusp, is infinite. Equivalently, at weak coupling, if we have a cusp and we compute all the Feynman diagrams that contribute to it, those gluon exchange near the cusp you will find that they are divergent. So strictly speaking, the area of such Wilson loop is infinite, and the expectation value is strictly zero. But you're going to... okay, and this is a very physical reason, because we have massless particles, these gluons, and massless particles are very unlikely not to split and to emit many soft gluons. So when we consider some scattering amplitude or some set of initial particles, some gluons, the most probable thing that we would like to do is to split into many, many soft gluons. But when we fix some fixed number of external gluons, let's say in the future, the probability for that is zero, unless we put some IR regulator. So what we will have to do is we have to regulate the amplitude or the Wilson loop. So the way we will regulate it, there are many ways. We have to, what we will do, we'll subtract the contribution of these divergences. One can take, for example, a ratio of different amplitudes of different loops such that all these divergences cancel out. The quantity I will describe now is called the reminder function. It is given, and this is for MHV amplitudes. There is an analog function for non-MHV amplitudes. It's given by a log of the expectation value of this Wilson loop minus some known function of the coupling, f of lambda, that is called the cusp anomalous dimension, times the log of the expectation value of the same Wilson loop, but computed in a free U1 theory. The expectation value of a U1 theory, of a Wilson loop in a U1 theory, is just an exponent of the one gluon exchange. So this part here is also known as the BDS ansatz. This part here captures all these divergences correctly, and therefore once we take this difference, we remain with a finite quantity. This finite quantity is conformal invariant. That is, it's only a function of the conformal cost ratios. It's only a function of what I call chi I j k l, where a conformal cost ratios, I j k l, is a function of the following form. Let's call the locations of the cusps of this Wilson loop x. So this would be x1, x2, x3, and so on. These conformal cost ratios are all the possible conformal invariant ratios that one can make from the location of this cusp, from the shape of this loop. So, for example, it can be xij, xi minus xj square times xkl square divided by xik square, xjl square. So this is this function that we are after is a conformal invariant function, and therefore only function of the conformal invariant data, which is the conformal cost ratios of the cusps of the loop. So for simplicity, in this talk, let me focus on some very special loops, those loops that can be embedded in R11 subspace of R1,3. That is like amplitudes where all their momenta are living in a plane. So if we are in R11, all we have is the time direction and some one space direction. Okay? We can write them as x plus t, the time direction plus the space direction, and x minus. If we try now to embed such a polygon, and remember that the edges of the polygon are null because the external gluons are on shell, all we can do is move in the x plus direction, then move in the x minus direction, then in the x plus direction again, and so on. So to demonstrate, for example, the issue of what these cost ratios are, let me describe the simplest such polygon in R11. The simplest such polygon that has conformal cost ratios is the octagon. So let me write such a polygon with 8 edges. And the reason we have to go up to 8 to have something simple is the following. In this R11, these conformal cost ratios factorize into conformal cost ratios in the x plus direction and conformal cost ratios in the x minus direction. This will be part of the exercise today, I think. So here is an octagon, and let me draw this two direction again. This was x plus. Here we have on the x plus 4 points. Let's call them 1, 2, 3, and 4. So you see that we can do only one cost ratio of this form from the x plus direction. And the same thing from the x minus. So this example of the octagon, it has two independent cost ratios. One is the cost ratios in the x plus direction, and another is the cost ratio in the x minus direction. And the area, the regularized area of the corresponding polygon, is only function of these two independent cost ratios. So how we are now going to compute the area of such polygon? Our tool, write it here, our tool is the integrability of the classical worksheet in ABS. This worksheet, sigma model, is integrable, and this will allow us actually to compute this area without really finding the embedding of the worksheet. We'll be able to compute it just a function of the conformal cross ratios without finding the actual shape of the full string. So let me remind you what it means, the classical integrability of the string worksheet. It means that the case that the equation of motion of the string means that we have a flat connection on the worksheet. For this case, this flat connection, described by A of theta, is a 2x2 matrix, which is a function of what we call, I'll call theta, which is called the spectral parameter. The equation of motion are equivalent to the condition that this one form, 2x2 matrix one form, is flat for any value of the spectral parameter theta. That is that dA plus A where J equal to 0 for any value of theta. Okay? In the problem of the spectrum, one is interested not in computing the area of a string worksheet, but is computing its energy. In the spectrum problem, let me just do an analogy. In the spectrum problem, the string worksheet has a topology of a cylinder. And what we are interested in that case is the energy of the corresponding string, the spectrum. And the way we use this Lax connection is that we compute the monodromy of this Lax connection, let me call it omega, of theta around the cylinder. This is defined to be the trace of the path order e to the integral d sigma a sigma around the cylinder. What it does, this holonomy capture all the integrability conserved charges of the state that propagate here on the cylinder. In particular, one of these charges is the energy that one is interested in. However, in our case, the worksheet has a different topology. It has a topology of a disk, right? It is a its boundary is this polygon. So the analog of what's been done here will be the following. we'll compute the holonomy, again, of this lattice connection between edges. And again, what it does is measure, in a sense, all the integrability charges of what, in a sense, is flowing here through this edge. We will consider several such holonomies, and we will close them into a cycle in the following form. Something like that. This will be a set of four such holonomies, and this closed set of four holonomies we will call, in a second, YS. So again, very interested in computing the area of this string worksheet that ends on the polygon. And our tool is the integrability of the classical string worksheet or the existence of such flat connection. Let me, before going into details, describe for you the solution. What is this area as function of the cost ratios? Yes. I will make it precise in a second, but YS would be a set of such four holonomies between edges. Okay. For this talk, I will focus on the MHV amplitudes. The MHV amplitudes are dual to the usual bosonic Wilson loops. For non-MHV, I think maybe Dave will talk about it, one has to decorate the Wilson loop by some insertions. Anyhow, we expect that at strong coupling, the result I present here is universal. That is, it captures the leading exponential behavior of the amplitude. Yes. We'll go into details in a second. I'll respond to that. Any other questions? So before going into the derivation, let me describe the solution itself. And I wrote it in advance here. So this minimal area, the area of this minimal surface, after we subtracted the UV divergence, is, again, it's just a function of the conformal cost ratios, we can write it in, we can divide it into three different pieces. The first piece is what we call ABDS-like, an A period. These two pieces are completely trivial. They are just of the form some sum of log of differences of points and a simple known matrix in between. So these are very trivial parts. The non-trivial part is what stands here, what we will call YY critical, and computing it will be part of your exercise. What is this YY critical, or here I wrote the value of this A period plus YY critical, is given by a contraction of a simple matrix, omega, is just the inverse of this simple matrix that has 1 minus 1 of the diagonal. And A and B are two functions, two vectors that are described now. We introduce a set of Y, S's, these are functions of the spectral parameters. This would correspond exactly to these cycles here. And they are given by the following integral equations. The first term in the equation is what we call a source. This is just here we see the two cost ratios, the cost ratio in the plus direction and the cost ratio in the minus direction. You see that I forgot to write the... The yellow indicate the case where S is even, and the blue indicate then the case where S is odd. So even and S odd is the blue. So this is just the two cross ratios in the plus or in the minus direction, one dressed by cosh theta and the other dressed by sinh theta. This part is trivial. And then the second part is a convolution of function of y with s plus 1 and y s minus 1 with a simple kernel. So the way we solve such an equation is by iteration. And this will be one of your exercises. We start, let's say, with y that is just equal to the source, to the first one, and then iterate it through the kernel and improve the guess for y order by order in the iteration. And what you will find is that this iteration converges very, very fast. So the way we solve this integral equation is numerically by plugging it into the computer. It converges very, very fast. Now, these two non-trivial elements of the area here, what I call AS and BS, are just the leading and next to leading terms in the expansion of this Y of S, let's say at theta that goes to minus infinity, or equivalently at theta that goes to plus infinity. So after we can solve for Y theta, we can also read, and this would be more explicit in your exercise, what are the two leading coefficients when we take, let's say, theta to minus infinity. Then you can plug this back in and get a very explicit expression for the area in terms of the cross ratios and the y's, and again, this would be in the exercise. What I'll do now is, let's see how much time will allow me, but to derive these results. To derive this result, let me start from some preliminaries. Let me, before going into the solution, just describe more concretely what is the problem we want to solve. So we want to solve for this minimal area of a string in ADS3. ADS3 is the anti-de-Sitter space whose boundary is this R11. And we have this Lux connection, A, describe it as a curly A of theta, which is a 2, again, by 2 matrix. And I can write it as a sum of 3 pieces. One piece would be just a piece that is independent of theta. There is a piece of e to the minus theta times what we will call phi z, dz, plus e to the theta, phi z bar, dz bar. And this is an SL2 connection. SL2 connection means that it's traceless. It's a 2x2 matrix. Each component of this matrix is a one form, and it is traceless. Okay? Now, the equation of motion plus Virasoro is equivalent to the demand that this connection is flat at any value of theta. More explicitly, it means that the covariant derivative made with this flat connection, dz and dz bar, equal to zero for any value of the spectral parameter. Now, let me define a function we call p of z, which is defined to be 1/2 the trace of this phi z squared. And you can easily convince yourself that using this flatness condition, this trace is a function only of z and not of z bar. It's an holomorphic function. This function we will call p of z. And one final ingredient is that, for those of you who know, this flatness condition for such a connection is equivalent to what is known as the Eachin equation. Yes. In terms of what? This is that there are one forms on the worksheet. So this is one form on the worksheet. You can write the component of this this A and phi in terms of the embedding coordinates of the worksheet in ADS. Okay? For example, if we have a flat space, okay, a one form for the string in flat space would be J alpha would be D alpha of X. This is the analog of that for ADS. So it's a bit more complicated because the space is curved and you can split it in that form. I don't have time to go into the explicit expression. There is only one? No, phi is not a scalar. Phi is just a name of a 2x2 matrix whose component are some combination of the fields on the worksheet, but it's a coefficient of e to the minus t. Okay? It's not some fields, specific field on the worksheet. It's just a name of some combination of this form, the x, made from derivative of the fields on the worksheet. Any more questions? So the one final ingredient, let's say, this slackness condition is equivalent to the Hitchin equation, but what we have here is what's called a Z2 projection of it. There exists a unitary matrix, a 2x2 matrix, called U, just a constant unitary matrix that satisfies the following relation, U A of theta times U minus 1 equal a theta that is shifted by I pi. That's it. And finally, the area we are interested in computing is given by 2 integral d z square trace of phi z bar. So this is the quantity we are interested in computing. One final comment is that so far I did not specialize to such solutions that end on the polygon. This is true for any solution of string that is moved in ADS3. To consider those solutions that end on such polygon, we have to specify a boundary conditions for this flat connection. And the boundary conditions that lead to solutions that ends on such polygon are the following. One is that this holomorphic function, P of Z, is not an arbitrary holomorphic function, but is a polynom. And if we want such a polygon with 2n cusps, then this P would be a polynom of degree n minus 2. That is, it's equal to z to the power n minus 2 plus, say, a1z to the power n minus 3 plus so on. It's just a polynom of degree n minus 2. And the second boundary condition is that this piece here of the connection that is independent of the spectral parameter vanish at the boundary. So at z goes to infinity, this A at Z going to infinity, which would be the boundary of the worksheet, it goes to zero. So this is just setting the problem more precisely. We have such a flat connection. We are interested in computing the area under these boundary conditions. Okay? Yes? These are just 2x2 matrices. Taking a trace of a 2x2 matrix. Again? Here the trace is just a trace of 2x2 matrices. It's not the metric on the worksheet. Okay? If you want, it's a trace in the Lie algebra of SL2. So let's start from this area and see how it can be related to this data. I think I'll erase this. We can always, this is an SL2 connection. We can always do a gauge transformation, an SL2 gauge transformation, such as say this phi z would be diagonal. So if we pick a gauge, such that phi z is diagonal, since it is traceless, and the trace of square of it is given by P, it must be given by the following matrix, square root of P, 0, 0, and minus square root of P. What we see that we have here is a Riemann surface. This is a two-sheeted Riemann surface given by the equation y squared equal P of Z. Okay? For any value of P of Z, there are two sheets, two possible values of y. One is square root of P, and the other is minus square root of P. In other words, I can write these two sheets as follows. Here are the two sheets. And this y, this P of Z may have some points where it vanish. Points where it vanish, we have a branch cuts that go in between the zeros. And when we pass through the branch cuts, we will pass from one sheet to the other. This picture is equivalent to the following picture. We have here a Riemann surface where here I describe two of its handles. Okay? Now, let's go to the area. The area was defined to be, forget about factor of two, integral dz square trace, again, of phi z, phi z bar. Let me evaluate this in the base, in the gauge, if I take this diagonal form. In this base, this is the same as integral dz square, square root of p, times phi z bar 1, 1, this comes from this upper left, minus phi z bar 2, 2. Or another way of writing this equation is the following. This is, again, an integral over the full worksheet. Yes? Let's ignore factor of twos for this time. Okay. Another way of writing the same integral is the following. This is like a wedge of two, one form. Let me call one of them lambda and the other u. This lambda is just the one form, square root of p, dz. The one that stands here, coming from phi, z. And the other is some, again, another one form, whose z bar component on sheet one, u, z bar on sheet one, equal to phi, z bar, 1, 1. And equivalently on sheet two. So far, it's just a definition. Again?
In this notation, you probably don't want the D2 to be
right. All right, right. It's inside the one form. So if I include a DZ here, I don't need to write it here. Now, note that this one form is just an holomorphic form. It's therefore closed. Now, assuming, and I will prove that later, that there exists a one form U that satisfies this relation with phi z bar, that is also closed. If these two forms are closed, then we can use what is called the Riemann bilinear identity, which says that this integral is given by, right, like that, minus I, sum over all the cycles of this Riemann surface. So, for example, we draw here. This is some cycle, gamma 1. This will be some other cycle, gamma 2, and so on. So we have a sum of all the cycles of this Riemann surface, time an integral times a matrix, I'll call omega, or let me call it omega SR, times the integral over the cycle of the one form lambda, this is gamma S, times the integral over the cycle gamma R of U, where this omega RS is this matrix given here, which is the inverse of the intersection matrix. For example, these two cycles intersect here. Yes. 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 So it's a good question. The full topology of the actual world sheet we are interested in is a disk. This Riemann surface just comes about because of this polynomial P. Okay? I just focus on this part of the connection. But the full connection is a very smooth connection on the full world sheet without any cuts or branch points. These potential branch points just come in from focusing on this part here. Okay? Or as we will see soon in the W, what is called the WKB approximation. What we learned from this relation is that the objects we are interested in order to find this area are the cycles. You want to compute cycles, or let me draw them here. You want to compute these cycles around the cuts of this Riemann surface. Okay? So how we do that? This Y would be exactly that. This Y would be exactly these objects that compute for us these cycles, and therefore related to the area. Let me show how this comes about. So okay, I'll erase here. Let me define what we call a flat connection. Flat connection or flat section is a solution to the following equation: d plus this a of theta acting on phi equal to zero. Okay. So since these are 2x2 matrix, this is a this object has two components, one and two. And the solution in general have two independent solutions, this equation. Given such two solutions, let me call one of them var phi and the other var psi, we can construct what we call the brackets of these two, which is defined to be the contraction of these two with an epsilon tensor. Epsilon alpha beta, psi alpha, psi beta. Now, since this is an SL2 connection, since this connection is traceless, one can convince itself that this product is just constant. It's independent of Z and Z bar. Maybe you would think that this is a function of both theta, Z and Z bar. But because this connection is traceless, it's actually independent of Z and Z bar. This calls the Wolskian of this problem. In this, okay. Suppose now we consider this flat connection and take the limit where Z is very, very large. In the limit where Z is very, very large, one of our boundary conditions were that this piece here, A, goes to zero and is negligible. So in the limit that Z is very, very large, we can drop it. And there this flat connection takes the following form. This A goes in the limit where Z goes to infinity. Let me write D plus A. Let's go to D plus E to the minus theta times phi Z of phi z was square root of p, 0, 0, minus square root of p, plus e to the theta times phi z bar. Now, from the flatness condition, you can see that if we drop the A piece here, then the flatness condition is will tell us that if phi z is diagonal, also phi z bar is diagonal. So what stands here would be square root of p bar, 0, 0, and minus square root of z, p bar. Now, when we take z to infinity, remember that this p was a polynom of degree n minus 2. So square root of p goes to z to the power n over 2 minus 1. We see that at large z, therefore it's trivial to solve this equation. This is just diagonal equation, the upper and the lower component factorize, and the two independent solutions are just exponential. The two independent solutions are the following. Phi goes to e to the plus or minus, these are the two independent solutions, e to the minus theta times z to the n over 2 plus e to the theta times z bar to the power n over 2. Okay. Times the corresponding vector, which will be 1, 0, or 0, 1, depending on the sign. So what we see that we have here is the following. Let's assume that for a moment the theta equal to 0. So here is the z-plane. And if theta is equal to 0, we have one solution, the one with plus, is just blow up as we move along the real direction. And the other solution is exponentially suppressed. So if you go here along the real direction, we have two solutions. One is blowing up, and one is exponentially decaying. As we gradually rotate, the two solutions change roles. And eventually, after we shift the argument of z by pi over n, the solution that was decaying is now growing, and the solution that was growing is now decaying. This is called Stokes phenomena. We have what is called Stokes sector. Each such sector is of size 2 pi over n. Well, in each such sector, we have one solution that is growing and one solution that is decaying. Let this be the argument of z. So here will be pi over n and minus pi over n. Here we have one solution that is very small, but as we move to the next sector, it becomes large. And there is another solution that is very large here, and as we move to the next sector, it becomes small. So note that, therefore, I can associate to each sector two solutions. One we call BI. This is the big solution at sector I, the solution that blow up. This will be the big solution. And the other we'll call SI, which will be equal to the small solution. Note that only the small solution is well-defined, because the big solution, we can always add to it a small solution, and it is still big. So only the small solution, up to an overall normalization, which I'll fix shortly, is well-defined. And something that we can do now is take the product of two such small solutions. We can take, maybe I'll leave that. Yes, you're right. So we can now take the small solution at some sector I and another small solution associated with sector J and take the product of the two. That is, here we have the small, this, let this be sector I. Let's say this would be this sector J. Here there is some small solution. We can take it and translate it using this equation using the flat connection into some point, let's say here, and you can take this small solution and translate it into the same point. And after we have these two solutions at the same point, you can take their product. And this product is independent of this point where they meet. Okay? Because the connection is traceless and flat. Finally, the cross ratios that describe the shape of this polygon are related to this product in the following form. This cross ratios was of the form xij plus or minus xkl plus or minus over the other combination, ik xjl. And this is equal to the products of these small solutions in the corresponding sectors. One can show, or not, I don't have time to show that, but this is equal to Si, Sj, Sk, Sl, divided by Si, Sk, Sl, Sj. Evaluated at theta equal to 0 or pi over 2. 0 for the plus and pi over 2 for the minus. So again, this this product or small section are exactly the holonomies between two sectors. Or in the picture that we have these polygons, this product of small solutions are these pieces here that go between two edges. This would be I, and this would be J. Let me now describe how we can use these products to derive what we call the Y-system equation. The Y-system equation is an algebraic equation which appears in your first exercise on day one. So let me describe that. I'll use that board. Yes. This would take some time. I don't have, but morally, when you take the product of a small solution with any solution, you're picking its big component because a product of something with itself is zero. This is contraction with an epsilon tensor. So when you do that, you're probing the big solution here and the big solution here. The big solution tells you to which direction you are going on the worksheet. So before deriving these Y systems for these holonomies or for such ratios of holonomies, let me first set a normalization for this small solution. Remember that these small solutions are well-defined up to an overall normalization. I'll fix a normalization, just a convenient one. So first, I set the following normalization. I set the product of Si with Si plus 1 to 1 at any value of the spectral parameter theta. Second, remember that we had this unitary matrix U that satisfied that U A of theta U minus 1 was equal to A of theta shifted by pi, I pi. This means that if we take a solution with some sector I, shift theta by I pi, and dress it by U, we get a new solution. But when we shift theta by I pi, the sector where this solution is small, it jumped by 1. Remember that in the exponent of these two small solutions that I had here, they were dressed by e to the theta and e to the minus theta. So this would be proportional to the small solution at sector Si plus 1. The second normalization I want to pick is just to set them equal. And since this is a unitary matrix that has determinant 1, these two normalizations are consistent. Remember that these products of Si with Sj was defined to be just a contraction of the two solutions with the n epsilon tensor. This is just a determinant, a 2-by-2 determinant, where the first column was Si and the second column was Sj. So the definition of this product. The algebraic relation or this Y system equation is nothing but a trivial identity for 2-by-2 determinants. This identity also calls the Schouten identity. If you take a product of 2 epsilon tensor, you can write it as a sum of 2 other products of epsilon tensors with shifted indexes. Let me describe it now. Again, this is nothing but the Schouten identity. Here. So let's consider the following product of this contraction of small solution. Let's consider the product of S minus K with S K plus 1 times the product of S minus K minus 1 with S K. Given our description in terms of small section, if this was sector, let's say, k, k plus 1, minus k, and minus k minus 1, these are two, just the this holonomy here and this holonomy here. Okay? The Schouten identity is just related to two other products. This is equal to the product S minus k, S k, S minus k minus 1, S k plus 1 plus S minus k minus 1 S minus k and S k plus 1. Again, in this picture, again, these are our four sectors. Here we have a contraction of S minus k with S k, and here we have a contraction of S k with S k plus 1 and S minus k with S minus k minus 1. It's also called the Skine relation. We have two of these that cross. It's equal to the sum of the two possible ways of resulting this crossing. Let me just rewrite now this equation in a bit different form by just naming these products. So let me name T 2K plus 1. Let me define it to be this product F S minus K minus 1 S K plus 1. And let me define, so this is the case where the index is odd, and the case where the index is even, call it S 2K. We call it, again, S minus K minus 1 with SK, and let me add index plus. This plus index means the following: F plus minus of theta is defined to be F of theta plus or minus I pi over 2. So with this product, when we shift the spectral parameter by 1. Now one can convince itself that this is nothing but T2K plus. Because if we do two pluses, we are shifting by pi. The shifting by pi is equivalent to shifting to the next sector. Well, this part here is T2K without any shift. So to cancel this shift, I'll put here minus. Well, this part here is T2K plus 1. Well, this part here, erase this, is T2K minus 1. In our normalization, this piece here is just equal to 1. So the equation we got, which is called the Pirota equation, is the following. We got the TS plus TS minus equal to TS plus 1 t is minus 1 plus 1. Okay? This is what called iota, which is equivalent to the y system equation that I'm going to write now. So the y's are nothing but these products of t function, this product of sections. The y's are nothing but this form. So let me define y s to be equal to 2 s plus 1 times t s minus 1. Okay? If you now use this definition and compute y s plus times y s minus, one finds that this is equal to y s plus 1 plus 1 times y s minus 1 plus 1. And again, this is the y system equation that you had an exercise on it in the first day. You see, it's nothing but a trivial identity of 2x2 determinants. By itself, it doesn't contain any dynamical information. It was just an identity of epsilon tensors, if you want. If I'm writing it in terms of the cross ratios, for example, this y, if the index is even, this is just this ratio of this two things here. This will be S minus K, SK, S minus K minus 1, SK plus 1, over this piece that was equal to 1 here, the S minus K minus 1, S minus K, and S K, S K plus 1. So from the polygon, again, perspective, these are nothing but such cycle contracted from a four holonomies. Let me explain why these cycles, these Y functions, is exactly what we want to compute the area. So, let's erase this part here. Consider now the limit where we sent the spectral parameter theta, let's say, to minus infinity. When we sent the spectral parameter to minus infinity, we had this flat connection, d plus a of theta. And if we send now theta to minus infinity, the piece in it, this was proportional to e to the minus theta, is the dominant piece. And this was phi z. So in this limit, this goes to d plus e to the minus theta times this phi z. Or to be more precise, phi z was square root of p, 0, 0, minus square root of p, dz. So let's consider, for example, y2 and try to evaluate it in this limit. So I'm asking, what is y2 at theta goes to minus infinity? y2 was defined to be this s minus 1, s1, s minus 2, s2, divided by s minus 2, s minus 1, s1, s2. So let's say here is the z plane. And if you want now to evaluate such a product using this connection, what we'll do is what we call the WQB approximation. Any point here, we can translate along the direction where this piece here is positive and real. Okay, so this direction here is the direction where e to the theta square root of p dz is real and positive. This defined what we call a WKB line for each point. Okay? So from any point, we can evaluate the solution along this line using translation with this flat connection in the limit where theta goes to minus infinity. Let's consider the case where this polynom has some, here would be the zeros and branch cuts in between them. And let this be sector minus one. This would be sector minus two. This would be sector one. This would be sector two. And this would be sector zero. Okay? I can compute this WKB lines and see, for example, that we have one WKB line that go here between these two zeros, one that goes here, one that goes here like that, and another one that go here like that. Suppose now we want to evaluate, again, this cycle, Y2. We want to start here, let's say, at sector minus 1, and evaluate the product of it with S of 1. But you see that there is indeed a WKB line that connects between them. And the same here. So what we will compute, the following polynomy, we have this piece here that evaluates this product, this piece here that evaluates this product, and then we have to divide by this two pieces here. Altogether, if you take into account who is in the numerator and who is in the denominator, what we have done is close the cycle. So we see that this Y2 is equivalent to computing the cycle. It's just going around here. Okay? So just Y2. So Y2 in the limit the theta goes to infinity give us in this polynomy of the connection that we call lambda. Lambda was square root of p dz. Okay. Let me write it here. What we concluded is in the limit that theta goes to minus infinity, this log of Ys, in particular Y2, goes like minus e to the minus theta, this was the leading term coming from this piece, time the polynomy on the cycle gamma s of lambda, where lambda was the square root of p dz. Okay? Yes. 10 minutes? Okay. I'm almost done. Okay. So we see that in the limit theta goes to infinity, this Y's, these ratios, exactly compute for us the cycle over the Riemann surface defined by this polynom P. Okay. Yes. There is minus 2, 2. Yes. If you flip the 2, it's an overall minus sign. It's not... right. We are taking the log of this Y. So this is the leading contribution as theta goes to minus infinity. If you consider the subleading contribution, remember the full connection, this full A, had three pieces, where it was A, e to the minus theta, phi z bar, plus e to the theta, e to the minus theta phi z, and e to the theta phi z bar. So if you go now to the next order, this A would contribute a piece. So this would be a piece that doesn't have any theta dependence, again, on this gamma S, this is called alpha, and I would not prove it now, but one can show that this is actually zero. This would be irrelevant to what I want to claim. And the next piece would come exactly from this phi z bar. We go to the next piece, get in another piece, e to the theta integral around this gamma S of translation with this phi z bar. This is exactly the form that we call u. Now, because this full connection is closed, it's a flat connection, so is any element that comes here in the expansion of it at negative theta. So again, you see we related now the log of these y functions to the cycles with the two one forms that we were interested in, lambda and u. So if we know what is y, we can expand it, evaluate these two terms, the leading term as theta goes to minus infinity, and the subleading term that goes to the theta, and plug it into the area. Just contract them with a trivial matrix. What we don't know yet is what are these y's? So remember, the y's were function of the spectral parameter that A satisfied the y system equation, this trivial algebraic equation of 2 by 2 determinants. And second, they were related to the cross ratios. Because when we put theta, the spectral parameter, to 0 or to I pi over 2, such ratios were nothing but the cross ratios in the x plus or in the x minus direction. So, for example, this y2k at 0 was this cross ratio, call it 2s, in the plus direction, and this y2k at pi over 2 was the cross ratio in the minus direction. So this is the relation between these y's and the geometry. It's some specific values of the spectral parameter. They are nothing but the corresponding cross ratio. Okay? So how do we solve for these functions given this algebraic relation and given, if you want, these boundary conditions at theta equal to 0 and theta equal to I pi over 2? Let me convince you that this is the solution. Okay? And the way to prove that is simply to first let you evaluate it at theta equal to 0. If you evaluate it at theta equal to 0, here we have a cinch of 2 theta. This term is 0. It doesn't contribute. Sine of theta is again 0. What we get is just a log of the cross ratio, and in that case where the index is even, of the cross ratio in the plus direction. So it satisfies this boundary condition. Let's now evaluate it at I pi over 2. If you evaluate it at I pi over 2, this sine 2 theta is sine of pi is again 0. Now this cosh is 0, and this sine just equal to I, and you get again the log of the cross ratio in the minus direction. So this equation satisfies these two boundary conditions. The next thing is let's evaluate the log of the y system equation. Let's take the log of y plus the log of y minus. If we compute the log of y plus times plus the log of y minus, remember plus and minus mean shift by I pi over 2. This cosh and this sinh do not contribute. Because if I shift cosh by I pi over 2, I get I sinh. If I shift it by minus I pi over 2, I get minus I sinh. When I sum the two, they cancel. In other words, this cosh and sinh here are just zero modes of this discrete Laplace. Let's now consider the convolution piece. If we ignore poles, then again, when we shift by I pi over 2 or by minus I pi over 2, now this sinh to theta will go back to itself because it's a factor of 2 here, but this cosh will become I sinh or minus I sinh. So the two contributions will cancel each other. However, remember that here we have a pole. So if you try to shift theta here, we will hit the pole of this cosh. Depends on the shape of the contour. And here for this choice, we are going above the zero. In one of the two directions, in one of the two shifts, by plus I pi over 2 or by minus I pi over 2 of theta, we will definitely cross the pole in the theta prime integration. When we cross the pole, we have to pick the residue. The residue is, again, a theta equal to theta prime. A theta equal to theta prime, this sinh to theta and sinh to theta prime cancel each other, and one remain with log of 1 plus ys plus 1 times log of 1 plus s minus 1, which is exactly the log of this equation. So this is the solution to this equation with these two boundary conditions. Once we solve it, we can now expand it. It's theta goes to minus infinity, read what is the coefficient of e to the minus theta, this was the lambda cycle, and read what is the coefficient of e to the theta, which this was the u cycle. And then plug it into the non-trivial part of the area, which I remind you was the contraction of this simple matrix, omega. This was just invert of a matrix that has ones and minus one of the off diagonal, with these two AS and BR. So in the exercise, we would have a more explicit form of what you get after we expand this at theta goes to minus infinity and plug it. So what you do in the one of the exercise is exactly solving for the area of such Wilson loops using iteration of this equation and plugging the result into the area. So to summarize, we have at strong coupling computed the expectation value of this Wilson loop or the scattering amplitudes as a function of the conformal cost ratios for any value of the conformal cost ratios, and the solution takes the form of what is called a TBA equation. We have a source here where the geometry enters the shape of the polygon and the convolution term, and from this solution we can read the non-trivial part of the area and compute by for an equation, e to the minus square root of lambda times this area, the expectation value of the Wilson loop. Thank you.
I meet somebody has questions.
Is the reason why these pieces of the area was related to log of this y's? We saw exactly this was this exercise. We saw exactly these cycles comes about in the WQB approximation in the limit when you take theta to minus infinity if you try to compute such a ratio, such a cost ratio. Again, these pieces here just closed into this loop that computes this cycle. Again? Another way of writing this is related to I guess a talk that Pedro would give on Friday. Another way of thinking about this area is a free energy of a quantum integrable model. Or as some, as we will see, we'll think about the expectation value of this Wilson loop as some transition amplitude between two states, two non-trivial states that describe the shape of the loop in an integrable theory. Okay? And when you compute its free energy or a related quantity which I call the critical YY functional, this is what evaluates for you the area. This is what the area means. I hope this will be a bit more clear after Pedro's talk. Yes.
The ratio of the S overlaps is related to the conformal cross ratio with the special values of theta.
So you can see that the solution itself that we are interested in is a solution of this flatness condition at theta equal to zero, let's say. This is the solutions in what we call the X plus direction, and the physical solutions in the X minus directions are the one at theta equal to I pi over 2. So given two such solutions, you can really construct the location of the embedding of the string in ADS. I didn't have time to describe this piece. Okay. Now you can see that taking a product of some solution, again, with a small solution, is really evaluated as its large part, which tells you to which direction you are going. And therefore, when you take such a ratio, it's equivalent to computing the cross ratio. But more precisely, it will take time, so maybe after the talk. Yes.
About those phi 2x2 matrices, I wanted to know which impact there are and determinants of them. These are certain values, and on which, when we get these values, how they are, for instance, different values. Yes, they fluctuate. And on what they make an impact. I mean, to what corresponds different values?
Again, values of such products in you?
Yes.
So again, such a product here was the holonomy between two such sections contracted with the small solutions of these sections. The overall number for this one is, of course, depends on how you normalize, overall normalization of the small solution. Mm-hmm. But after you fix a normalization, this is just this holonomy, or in the, again, in the Wilson loop picture, oh, so this is a question about notations? Okay, and in this Wilson loop picture, this would be this holonomy here between edges. And in a sense, it computes all the quantum integrable quantum charges that go in for here.